You are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, anti-electoralist, and more. If we are against so much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society might look like while recognizing that sadly none of us today are actually free. Having said all that, even though the device that you're listening to right now probably wasn't free, the radio waves are. WXRW sadly does cost money to operate, as all things do. To that end, please come on down to 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and get yourself a hat, and then wear that hat. Get yourself a mug, and then use that mug. Or get yourself a shirt, and then wear that shirt. All those proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or, even better yet, if you would like to become a community partner or an official supporter of WXRW, you can either donate to us at riverwestradio.com, or you can become an official underwriter if you have a business or an entity of some kind that would like to potentially be a community partner. Reach out to us. It's super easy to become an underwriter, and it's a lot of fun, and it shows your support for community radio. And every little bit helps a lot. And don't forget, you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker. So tell your listening device to play WXRW River West Radio. We are on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So this show has the potential to be really negative sometimes. And, you know, in my defense, it's primarily because this show is intended to deal with, you know, or it certainly has a tendency to deal with a lot of what I personally see as the ills of the modern world and how they negatively affect everyone. And of course, it's all, you know, through the lens of my own personal experience and the reading that I've done. But anyway, it can definitely swing pretty negative. But today, this week, I really do not want to swing negative. I figured it's time to be positive and optimistic because, as I've mentioned, I think optimists are the people in this world who actually get stuff done. There are still a lot of topics that I want to cover in this show, and we've got time yet, so we'll get to those. But for today, I want to talk about sociability, the human family, and our awesome shared potential. Every week, I end the show by thanking you for listening. And let me say, kind of unequivocally, if you're listening, thank you so much for listening. But then I also say that, you know, the next episode will deal with the topics of freedom and our awesome shared potential. And it's rare that we actually get to talk about our awesome shared potential. But I truly believe that the potential of our species is amazing, and it is awesome in the real usage of that term. It is awe-inspiring. And it's far beyond what I think we really comprehend or give ourselves credit for. As far as like the evolutionary storyline is concerned, I'm going to toot our own horn here for a second and admit that we are the apex. You know, at least we're the apex of what we can perceive and observe, you know, historically. And that might depress some people, but I see a lot of good in the human race. Obviously, I see a few barriers, you know, to us moving beyond our current kind of evolutionary level that, you know, maybe we've kind of plateaued at. And we might take some time to address some of those barriers, but first let's talk about the incredible things, the really laudable things that we've achieved, and take a moment to kind of pat ourselves on the back. That's what this show is going to be. It's going to be kind of me patting us on the back and saying, hey, it's not all bad. We're doing a pretty good job in some regards. So when historians and sociologists are running through their personal lists of human achievements, they are often wont to mention great monuments, or great historical events, such as treaties and governments, and or certain leaders and big buildings and stuff like that. And they'll point to the Empire State Building or the pyramids of Giza or the Aztec pyramids or the Great Wall of China or Hadrian's Wall. And looking back, man, they really like pyramids and walls, which is a little curious. But anyway, continuing the thread, they'll point out Mount Rushmore, or they'll point out the Eiffel Tower, or, they'll point to great pieces of famous art, like the Mona Lisa or the Statue of Liberty or blah, 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 blah. You know, that's what they point to. You get the idea. And, obviously, to be honest, huge monuments of the kind that sociologists and historians might point out of that nature and that scale are in and of themselves incredible achievements of cooperation. And I can certainly dig cooperation on that monumental level. Haha, monumental because they're monuments, get it? And that's certainly the kind of thing that you might think that I'd really love, because none of those things could have possibly been finished without the incredible cooperation of millions of people over the centuries. And, I admit, I used to really love big buildings and big monuments and stuff like that because they were just so impressive to look at. And, sometimes they had little pretty visual elements, that my eye would like kind of dancing on. But now, in this current iteration of myself, I really don't count monuments as great achievements of the human family. Instead, I see our inherent propensity towards cooperation itself as an amazing feat. And we have our primate ancestors directly to thank for the incredible power of communal cooperation. We are very similar to a huge swath of the animal kingdom in that we have lungs and hair and we give live birth and we're omnivores and we raise our young in family groups and all that stuff. And I'd wager that a full fifth of the animal kingdom has some kind of family or tribal structure that they leverage for safety, just evolutionarily. The other phyla being sponges and mollusks and echinoderms and arthropods, and some of which, by the way, also exhibit group behaviors which strengthen their chances of survival. But really, just boiling it down, no group like us, the humans, have mastered and refined the art of cooperation, at least on the sheer scale that we have. And of course, it could be argued that you social insects like bees and termites and ants are maybe better at cooperating than we are in some regards. But I would disagree to that statement, at least in part. I couldn't completely disagree because I got like this weird thing for termites and other you social animals, especially like the hairless mole rat. I just love them. Oh, you social animals just... Oh, they get my blood going. Like when I was a kid, I could not read enough about termites and hairless mole rats, but that's a topic for another show. As a quick teaser for that show, and I may have discussed this earlier, studies have shown that at least 40 to 50% of most eusocial organisms, like you take your typical ant in a colony, are just kind of putzing around doing nothing at all at any given moment. But I digress, that's for another show. Okay. I would say that it's not really debatable that we humans are totally unique among animals that have highly developed brains and spinal cords and nervous systems in our ability to use advanced language to cooperate to a degree never before seen on our planet. And I don't think that's, you know, a really wild stance to take. Like, a typical wolf pack can absolutely cooperate, you know, as can the herd of, you know, bison that they're surrounding. But neither of those groups can communicate on the sheer scale that we can, and certainly not to our level of efficacy. When faced with really incredible odds, humanity has proved time and again we are capable of overcoming perceived differences to achieve a common goal. You know, just look at us evolutionarily. We kind of stink. Like, we've got no appreciable fangs or claws. We're naked entirely. You know, we freeze to death so quickly. We've even evolved to the point that the amount of raw food that we can consume without just dying is really, really extremely limited. Like, we've even evolved to the point where we need to cook. Like, cooking is so essential, you know. So we, you know, just like pick us up and throw us, you know, naked into a field and we basically suck. Which is why, facing those incredible odds, we've proved time and again we can overcome any perceived differences within our little tribal groups to achieve our common goal. And that thing, that our commonality, the ability to recognize the humanity in another person and to love them, or at least respect them enough to reach out and help them simply for being a member of what we hopefully all recognize unconsciously as our extended human family, that is a powerful feeling that I know hopefully everyone has experienced at least one time or another in their life. You know, it might have been that feeling that you get, I've mentioned before, when you're at a show or a concert, you know, for a band you love and everyone around you knows that band. You don't know any of these other people from Adams Off Ox, but you all know that music. Most of you probably know the words to that music. You know, it could be argued that the reason we form these tribes within tribes, you know, metalheads within the family of rock and roll, within, you know, the larger human family, is all to achieve commonality, because it goes back to our sociability. We want to belong. So whether or not we speak the same language, we are capable of reaching across the divide of speech to cooperate. And really, that is just simply astounding to me. If you have just tuned in, you're listening to WXRW River West Radio 104.1 FM, or you're listening to us at riverwestradio.com, or you're listening to me on creamcitymedia.com/anti. And this is The Anti, and I'm your host, NTSC. And today, we're taking a little break from kind of the more pessimistic stuff that I fall prey to. We're talking about the really cool stuff, our awesome shared potential that I promise at the end of every show I will talk about. I'm making good on that promise today. Talking about our awesome shared potential. So we just talked about cooperation, and cooperation on the level that we have achieved would be impossible without language. So let's talk a little bit about language, because language does play a huge part in our success as a species, and certainly cannot be discounted. Cooperation on the level that I've described would not be possible without really the miracle of language. And I do see it as a kind of evolutionary miracle. And language takes many, many forms. I'm going to be talking about the evolutionary tool of spoken language, but it is in no way better than, you know, for example, sign language, which has been proved to work on the language center of the brain. It is absolutely a natural language. And forms of sign language have existed for hundreds of thousands of years. We'll mainly be talking about spoken language, just because of my personal experience. That's what I have the most, stories about. scientific studies have shown that there are millions of rudimentary languages kind of spoken among the millions of species of animals on the planet. And I think without a doubt, ours is the most effective at communicating incredibly complex concepts. So even though, for example, the dance of a bee will communicate where food is and potentially what kind of food it is and, you know, the value for the hive, the little dances of the bees can't necessarily give someone, you know, can't give another bee very specific instructions on how to build an entirely new hive from scratch if they needed to. You know, it's a bad example, but I'm really good at creating bad examples. I'll probably have to do an entire show on how language is a constructed barrier that is also keeping us from achieving the freedom that I personally would like us to strive for. But today's show, again, is about positivity and optimism. So we're going to focus on what language has really done for us beneficially. So I've mentioned this before. I'm extremely lucky to be in a supportive, nurturing relationship. My wife and I are a team. We call ourselves a little team, and we cooperate really beautifully, if I may toot my own horn. And language is really the main tool that we use. And I'm not talking about nonverbal communication, which is also not to be discounted. And its importance is immeasurable, really. But with spoken language, anecdotally, my wife and I achieve what neither of us would be able to achieve on our own. And we do so quickly and efficiently, like billions of other people all over the world, you know, with the tool of language. You know, for example, we live in very stressful times, and we all face many hardships that make it difficult sometimes to get the stuff done that we really need to get done. So this example struck me the other day. I was in the little room of our apartment where we have a small collection of plants that we are trying to keep alive. Neither my wife nor myself have particularly green thumbs and have regrettably killed anywhere from 4 to 7 plants between us over the years. So the other day, I was in that little plant room and I yelled to my wife, who was in the bathroom, that I was watering the plants.
I'm watering the plants!
I yelled, right? And it struck me at that moment that language was the only thing keeping our current little family of plants alive. Since overwatering is the easiest way that most people kill their plants. I learned this from the store that I took my dying plant to one day, that we tend to kill them with kindness, you know, or over eagerness on our part to kind of please the plants, you know, because watering is a very obvious, like, oh, I'll water the plants. And so just me letting my wife know that the plants were going to be good for a few days before we needed to water them again, probably saved their lives. And that has saved their lives on multiple occasions. And that's a really silly example, but it's a real one, you know, and it demonstrates how effective even the simplest message is when it's communicated effectively and clearly. And really, it's the only reason I produce this show on a weekly basis. Through the power of language, I can hope to potentially radicalize maybe even one person who might be listening. Every time this show airs, or every time there's a repeat, there is a chance that the language I use might jive with someone, you know, or inspire them to maybe question the reality around them, and potentially begin considering interacting with the world and the people around them in a different way. And that reminds me, and I'll take a quick aside, I think I'm going to have to do another kind of generalized episode on anarchism again soon to talk about the differences between an ideology and a process, because I've been running into people thinking anarchism is an ideology. And that's a fair assumption for people to make because we're used to being faced with ideologies, you know, every single day. Anarchism is a process. through which you can interact with the world around you, and it's a process through which you can strive to maximize the possibilities of your life, and it's a process by which you can seek to formulate better questions. And that's it. It's not an ideology. And we'll go into that in a later episode, so hold on to your pants for that. But anyway, language is amazing, and every single time you use it, you have incredible potential to affect change in the world around you. And isn't that really incredible? Simple utterances, vibrations of your vocal cords, or you know, the shapes and postures and gestures that you create with your hands and body and your face have the ability to literally change your objective reality. It kind of is magic in that regard. You know, if magic is spoken spells, then spoken language is magic. If magic is moving your hands, then sign language is magic, because they can literally affect change on your objective reality. And that's awesome. And obviously it's been used historically to the detriment of all life on Earth and your personal liberties, but we can flip that story. Just so long as enough of us find the bravery in ourselves to speak out against the status quo. And you know, to that end, let me use this segment of this week's show to try and inspire you a little bit. So, it's kind of common practice that your place of work doesn't like you talking about stuff like how much money you make, you know, or how much time on your break you get, or you know, things like that. Company policy, they call it gauche or inappropriate, or it may actually even be against company policy talking about it. I would invite you to talk about those things. I would invite you to use your speech and talk about your working conditions, and if you like them or not, or if you feel they are favorable to you or not. And you know, talk about your wage or your salary, and ask questions of your coworkers about their wage and salary, and compare notes. See if there's a discrepancy, and talk about that. Talk about it a lot, and talk about how much, for example, the product that you're selling at your place of work is, you know, or maybe the service that your place of work offers. What is the sticker price? What is the bottom line? Then compare that to your wage, or compare that to your salary, and see if there's a discrepancy there. Because my guess is an hour of your work is cheaper than a median range thing that you're selling. Just talk about it. It's a great exercise in your so-called free speech. And it could potentially open up a larger discussion about value, you know, the value of our finite lives and the value and cost of the work that we do. I would invite you to use language around your family and friends and ask open-ended questions about, for example, hierarchy, right? Ask why someone gets to be the boss and others don't. Start discussions about hierarchy and call into question the social construct that, for example, we need to be governed. And I think if most people made it, you know, more personal, if they personalized these questions, and if they got people to really think about it, then they may realize that no, in fact, they don't need to be governed. They don't feel like they need to be governed. And language is a tool. It's just a tool, and albeit it's a very powerful one, and we can use it to our advantage to potentially radicalize the people that we love and respect the most. Using the tools we have available to us is really one of the greatest strengths of humanity. And they do call us tool users, after all, and we hold in high regard other animals that we witness using tools, because they're like us, and we like things that are like us. But beyond language and cooperation, I'd like to call upon another amazing trait that we have, which we can only vaguely recognize in other species, you know, at least to some extent. And that is our imagination. So the ability to cooperate and communicate towards cooperation are really only so good until you develop the ability to visualize the abstract, non-concrete world of kind of fantasy, of potential reality. It could be argued that the ability to imagine was really only worth developing when we didn't need to spend as much of our lives fighting tooth and nail for survival. So leisure time is good for everyone, and it's always been good for us, because it fosters the ability, it fosters the time to just imagine and be creative. And often, you know, the people we all see as being the most creative are really just those people who can afford the most leisure time. And how lovely it would be for everyone to have as much leisure time as they wanted. But anyway, it's exactly that ability, what I just did there, how lovely it would be for everyone to have as much leisure time as they wanted. It would be, it could be. It's that power to look at the objective world as it is, the reality around you, and to reconsider it, to frame it mentally as something else that does not exist. That is incredibly powerful. And none of what we've achieved could have been possible without the power of imagination and abstraction. And I'll probably have to do a show about creativity, but it is worth mentioning here that we owe all creativity to cooperation, whether we realize it or not, because there's no such thing as creativity in truth, at least not the way that some people kind of, visualize it. We are extremely good at taking bits and pieces of what we have already witnessed and mixing them together into something new. Our brains are really, in this sense, amazing remixers. But it is the ability to look beyond the real, into the realm of the possible, that inspires me. Without the desire to improve, the language to express that possibility, and the cooperative, sociable nature to make it all happen, we wouldn't be human, I would argue. So go out there and use the amazing tools at hand to realize our awesome shared potential. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti this week here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I will be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found at riverwestradio.com. So, use the three tools that we talked about today, cooperation as engendered by your sociability, which is part of your human makeup, the language that we have evolved over millions of years, which imbues us with the ability to change the reality around us, and the creativity to think of a better reality towards which we can work. If we all did that, I think we'd get somewhere really cool sooner rather than later. We'll talk about it more next week.